Good afternoon. You're listening to KFSK Public Radio in Petersburg. It's Midday Magazine for Monday, the 18th of June, 2018. I'm Joe Vicknicki with the local news. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski says she's concerned Alaska's economy will suffer as a result of China's 25% tariff on imports of American seafood. China announced the new import tax Friday in response to U.S. tariffs on Chinese goods. They're due to take effect July 6th. In a written statement, Murkowski said she's urging President Trump to reach a trade policy with China that protects the export market. Congressman Don Young says he's also asking the administration to ensure Alaska's seafood industry is protected. Senator Dan Sullivan did not respond to an inquiry by our deadline. In May, Alaska's congressional delegation wrote Trump, warning of a trade dispute and saying that it could prompt China to retaliate against American seafood. Their letter said a tariff could make targeted exports uncompetitive in an instant. They also said the Chinese market for premium Alaska seafood is especially important because Russia banned seafood imports in response to U.S. sanctions in 2014. The U.S. Supreme Court has agreed to hear an Alaska water rights case for the second time. Today, the court agreed to review Alaska hunter John Sturgeon's case. That case grew from a 2007 incident when National Park Service rangers confronted Sturgeon and said he could not operate his hovercraft in the Yukon-Charley Rivers National Preserve. The issue at the core of that case is a fight over control of rivers in Alaska, specifically who has the authority to regulate state navigable waters within conservation units. Those units are things like national parks and preserves, wildlife refuges, wilderness areas, and wild and scenic rivers. Sturgeon challenged the federal government's authority to regulate in those areas, and the state of Alaska has weighed in on his side, but several other groups have written briefs to the court as well, including one attorney who says if Sturgeon wins, the federal subsistence priority could be affected. Tonight's the public hearing and second reading for a proposal to end the senior sales tax exemption in Petersburg. The Borough Assembly is considering whether to put that issue on the ballot this October. A proposed ordinance submitted by local residents would end the senior tax exemption and replace it with an annual rebate for qualifying low-income seniors. That rebate would be $300 for a senior or $450 for a couple. As proposed, seniors would qualify if they're receiving one of several different kinds of state or federal food, housing, or health assistance. Supporters of the change say the borough needs the additional tax money to pay for services. Seniors continue to defend their need for this exemption, and other attempts to end it have been voted down in the past. The borough's charter requires that changes like this get voter approval. Tonight's also the third and final reading of an increase to moorage rates and other fees for using local harbors. Moorage will be going up 9%, and most other charges that the harbor customers pay will see a 12% increase starting in July. That change has yet to see any opposition from the public or assembly members. The assembly tonight also will be voting on the hire of James Kerr as police chief with an annual salary of $96,000. They'll also consider a new ordinance that would limit who could add items to an agenda for a special meeting of the Borough Assembly. Assemblymember Jeff Mucci is also seeking permission from the rest of the Assembly to sit in on a negotiation meeting with the Petersburg Municipal Employees Association on June 21st. Mucci also wants to discuss sending a letter to the U.S. Forest Service regarding rules for federal employees taking part in outside organizations. That meeting is at 6 o'clock tonight in Borough Assembly Chambers. You can hear it broadcast live on KFSK. We normally had planned for a Borough Business call-in show following this show. That has been canceled due to our inability to find people to take part in that call-in show. We will be broadcasting that meeting live tonight at 6 o'clock. Shipping costs dictate the price of everything in Alaska. Because of this, every island and coastal town feels the sting of shipping rates. June Leffler reports on how small business owners are reacting to barge and freight rate increases here in Southeast.
Lisa Mesmer works for a furniture store in Wrangell. Earlier this year, she received an email with the heading, Freight Rate Increases.
When I saw the heading of it, I kind of don't read the rest of it because we don't have a choice here. You can't, like, call them up and say, no, we're not going to pay this increase. So we're just stuck, and we pay what they say we pay.
Wrangell and the rest of Southeast Alaska received groceries, hardware, appliances, alcohol by seafaring barges coming from Seattle. It's really the only way things get to small coastal towns. Freight rates increase all the time, and at small increments, people just suck it up. But small business owners are seeing a steeper hike than anyone expected.
We know freight's been high here forever. I mean, it's just the way it's doing business in Wrangell, Alaska.
David Powell runs the Bay Company. His minimum freight rate increased 58% this year. For larger loads, it's three times what it was last year.
When the freight goes up, our rates go up. We lose sales because of what we have to price at to make money to be able to keep our lights on.
He sells boats, motors, buoys, anything for the water. He anticipates raising his prices to meet the extra freight costs.
I mean, we're talking a boat that would sell for, you know, $5,700 now will probably sell about $64 next year.
There are only two barge companies operating in Southeast, Alaska Marine Lines and Sampson Tug and Barge. Sampson's Vice President Jerry Morgan says the rates have increased to meet their own operating costs.
Really, it was just trying to get the rates corrected.
He says when Sampson got into the Southeast market 5 years ago, its competitors were setting low rates for the area.
I don't know why the rates were so low, but they were so out of market range, and it just doesn't make sense to even provide service to Wrangell at the rates that they were offering before. Rates in Southeast are just too low, pretty much across the books. I mean, it's a difficult market to compete in.
Alaska Marine Lines is the bigger barge company in Southeast. An AML representative said its rates are also going up, particularly for smaller loads. But raising rates on smaller loads means raising rates on smaller businesses, those that are already struggling to compete with big box and online retailers. And though it's a hard decision, there's no way around it. Businesses are going to pass that cost along to their customers. In Wrangell, I'm June Loeffler.
Last month was what many fear may be a new normal for those in the Southeast Alaska sport fishing industry. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game did not allow anglers to keep any king salmon for 2 months this spring on the inside waters. That applied to the inside waters and was meant to conserve Chinook salmon returning to Southeast rivers. In June, the agency opened up fishing in a few spots with hatchery kings. As Alana Elder reports, a couple of lodge owners in the Petersburg area seem unfazed by the restrictions, but a trade group says others in the industry are having a harder time.
Since the beginning of the month, people have been able to take king salmon from the Wrangell Narrows and City Creek. Both are sites where fish raised at Crystal Lake Hatchery return after years in the ocean, so this fishing is not supposed to impact Alaskan wild stocks. Tim Harper runs a lodge off the Wrangell Narrows, and he says the shorter king salmon season hasn't hurt his business.
No, I never had promoted the king salmon in May anyway because it was too early.
Harper says he only really sends his guests to fish for kings in the Narrows, and before June, there just aren't enough salmon there to make it worth the time and money. And he says people come to his lodge for the chance to fish for a bunch of different species.
You got rockfish, you got halibut, you got salmon, and you have crab and shrimp.
Wendy Yates owns another lodge nearby and says king salmon fishing has been pretty slow so far.
It's starting to pick up a little bit. We've had some customers coming in the last 2 days with some. I think the bigger tides are starting to impact us, so we're seeing a little bit more in the terminal fishery here. Hasn't really affected business. People book about a year out, so for them, they really don't know what the rules are going to be when they come up.
Yates did get calls this spring from a few booked guests who had heard about closures and wanted to know if they'd still be able to fish for kings.
You know, basically we told them we don't know, but we figured that the terminal fishery would still be open, you know, at least for some king fishing. So they were fine with that because so much of Alaska was closed.
She says overall, kings aren't the species that draws people to her lodge.
Most people would rather have the volume of cohos versus, you know, the limitations on kings. There's just not as many. And, you know, there's a lot of species in the river later in August, you know, with pinks and chums and cohos.
So for Harper and Yates, cutting back on king salmon hasn't been a big deal. But their businesses are really similar. Both rent out boats and gear, and neither lead guided trips. For salmon, they usually send their guests to the Narrows, even when the other inside waters are open. So if they haven't been affected, that doesn't mean no one has. Several other charters and guide businesses did not return calls, but Southeast Alaska Guides Organization Executive Director Samantha Weinstein, who advocates for charter and lodge operators, says this year has been rough for state biologists as well as people in the industry.
Those decisions are really hard for fisheries managers, and there's definitely a perception of unfairness when certain management doesn't make sense to the operators.
Weinstein explains some on the inside waters resented that anglers could still fish this spring on the outer coast.
Which means that during times of no retention for Ketchikan and Wrangell and Petersburg and Juneau, there's still an opportunity to catch a king salmon if you go out fishing in Sitka, or if an operator from Gustavus goes, you know, further outside. And same for Prince of Wales Island.
Fish and Game said this was the most efficient way to protect wild stocks, because a greater proportion of the kings caught from inside waters are wild, compared to those caught on the open ocean. Another frustration, according to Weinstein, is that operators had to tell clients about the closures on rather short notice, and some of them had already called the same clients in January, after the Alaska Board of Fisheries meeting. Weinstein says the restrictions announced in March were more widespread than what many had anticipated.
They then had to go back and make even more phone calls when the inside passage was close to retention. Both of those steps are really hard for operators, because you run your business on the trust of your clients and your ability to provide a really great Alaska experience.
For some guides and visitors, catching a wild king salmon is the experience. For others, like Harper and Yates and their guests, it's more about the chance to successfully catch a variety of fish. That strategy may make it easier to adjust to changes in other fisheries besides king salmon. In Petersburg, I'm Alana Elder.
Three orphaned black bears in Sitka have been given a bigger home. Earlier this month, the Fortress of the Bear released Smokey, Bandit, and Thule into expanded territory. They're no longer cubs, so they need more range to explore. Rachel Cassandra caught up with Claire Turner, the bear manager, who's worked with the bears since they were cubs.
Knowing the nature of black bears, how they can be a little bit more aloof, and they are real avid arboreal climbers, we've wanted to enclose a space that is going to really lend itself to increasing their mental welfare and giving them some great spots to hide and to forage.
Turner and I are standing on a deck overlooking what will be the new black bear habitat. It's a mostly wild acre surrounded in bear-proof metal and wire fence. There's a creek at the back, and the space is filled with salmonberry bushes, spruce, and slender alders. It has plenty of trees to climb and food to forage.
There's a good chance that once they get comfortable in that hillside, that we won't see them that often, because it's very dense brush, and it's going to be tricky to see them, but that's not a problem I mind having.
Turner first takes me through their old, smaller habitat. It looks like a bear playground. It has big tubes for them to hide in, with chunky logs and sticks banded together. Connected to that is the brushy wild.
Trying to keep a number of familiar elements to the new exhibit so that they have that comfort level and they've got things that they still know. So it shouldn't be too scary when we move them into this new exciting space.
The big question for all is, will the bears enter their new space? Turner hopes so.
They really like the space they're in now, so will they be quick to go back to their old home, or will they be hesitant?
The next day at the fortress, about 150 people show up to watch this moment. The bear handlers go into the new habitat. Volunteer Cody Knighton tells me they're loading the nooks and crannies with snacks.
So we put out the rare treats that they don't get often was the Pistachio Delight, Raspberry Parfait, and the Ambrosia Delight. And then we also got a bunch of salmon eggs donated not too long ago. And so we put those in the freezer and made essentially salmon egg popsicles.
Founder Les Kinnear enters the bear habitat. He, along with volunteers and staff, built the habitat. They worked over the winter while the bears were hibernating. Usually, people don't enter the enclosure, but the bears are very used to Kinnear. Before the door even opens, the three bears stick their noses up in the air.
Smokey and Julie abandoned. Come on.
And 10 minutes later.
Look at him.
They're licking hands. I told you.
You gotta install that wonderful ambrosia salad.
All three bears have entered their new home.
We're very excited about what's happening here today.
Kinnear is beaming.
The bears are exploring, finding the perimeter of their new territory. Bandit's up on the trail adjacent to the fence. He's excited. He's nervous.
How do you know they're like nervous and excited, or do you just imagine it?
Just their body language. He's alert. He's up on his toes. His ears are perked forward. He's got his head on a swivel. He's stretched out. He's just very excited about what's happening. Look at him up there. That's absolutely fabulous.
As the bears continue to explore, Thule even climbs a tree. After a few days, they're digging muddy daybeds, climbing trees, and taking naps. Soon, the salmonberry bushes will be fruiting, and the bears can enjoy the habitat's natural treats. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
And you can find a few photos and videos of the bears in their new habitat at the website kcaw.org. For KFSK News, I'm Joe Vicnicki.